Looking for something new? Try fencing, the Olympic and Paralympic sport that mixes speed, strategy, and fun. It's like chess meets cardio. Quick feet, quick decisions, and a satisfying beep when you score a point. Kids, teens, and adults can start anytime. No experience needed, and many clubs have loaner gear. Coaches teach fundamentals and safety from day one. Find a beginner class near you at usafencing.org/tryfencing. That's usafencing.org/tryfencing.
Hello, movie lovers. I'm welcome to the show. So tonight I actually have my good friend Anastasia Elfman here with me. We're here to break down Ghost Ship. Anastasia's a huge fan of this movie. So let's go ahead. Let's welcome her back to the show. Last time she did this with me was for Dexter. Hey, Anastasia. Welcome back.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Very welcome. It's always a pleasure to have you here. I just want to say you've been very busy over the last 2 weeks, right? With Richard promoting and all that stuff. I just want to say congratulations to you yet again for how great you guys are actually doing at the film festivals for the film.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah. I mean, just touring with it, creating these like pre-show performances where I like rip a heart out and eat it in front of an audience. And then we start the film Bloody Bridget. So yeah, it's a lot of work, but I love doing it. So it's super fun to tour around and go to different cities and states and stuff. So yeah. And then awesome. My brother-in-law, Danny, just had his Nightmare Before Christmas live to picture at the Hollywood Bowl, practically sold out, if not sold out. I didn't count heads.
But that's just awesome though, because Danny is such a delight to see on stage. And just, you know, from that little clip that I've seen, I can see how passionate he is about Nightmare Before Christmas, even after all these years. And just him performing, what's this? And just the way he performs it is just outstanding. And I love what he's doing. He's a huge inspiration to me in my childhood.
Yes, it's so special for us fans to see him not only perform live, but in front of a full 80-piece orchestra. So we have all of this incredible talent. And then he brings out Steve Bartek at the end and does a couple Oingo Boingo songs. I haven't posted any of those yet, but I plan to. It's just been such a whirlwind because this is our busy season anyways, because it's like spooky and Halloween time. And so just adding all of these extra fun events has... I'm glad that I'm just like sitting down and here and chatting with you about one of, I guess, our favorite films.
Right. That's one of the best things about this podcast. Also, too, I just got done reviewing The Frighteners, which Danny did the score for. Yeah. And I didn't realize until recently that he did the scoring for it. I'm like, wow. So he has that much through my whole entire childhood. He's been there for me as a kid.
Yeah.
So that's just awesome.
Yes, I'm excited to revisit that one too, because I'm revisiting all of these fun horror films with our daughter Audrey, and so that's kind of one of the next ones. I every time I like watch an interview or I you know listen to a podcast or something, they remind me of all of these fun films, and so it's like things get like a little chaotic at like when I get to like sit down and watch them with her while she's like juggling homework.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Let's go ahead. Let's talk about this movie. So my question for you, though, as a young Anastasia, when you first seen this movie on the horizon, what did you think of Ghost Ship? And what made you intrigued with the story and everything?
Well, I watched it when it came out. I was totally captivated by the whole, the whole story. I love ghosts. I love going back in time. I love practical effects. So kind of like it's a perfect package for me. And I feel like it's so special for us because this is almost like, because we both enjoyed the film, it's like a love note to this film, which while I was doing my research for the film, there's not like, I don't know why there are so many like, you know, mixed opinions out there, let's just say. But I definitely love this film.
What would you stand on it nostalgically out of 10?
Well, I wouldn't. I kind of judge very hard. So it's not a perfect film for me. And we can go more into that later. But I do really love it. And I guess I would say like maybe around an 8 or 9.
Okay.
you know, and that's very high for me.
I out of 10.
Like, I have a little bit of problems with some of the script, and that's, you know, that's not that's a normal. Huge thing, since this is like a very practical effects, scare heavy film. But overall, really loved it. Stood up for me for another watch, because I actually rewatched this not too long ago with our daughter Audrey, and now I had to rewatch it again just with this mindset of like how we're gonna chat about it.
See, that's how I do things. I've watched a movie at least twice. First time, I'm just doing it for me and just not taking notes, not doing any of that, but just nostalgically just saying, hey, I'm enjoying this. I feel like I'm a 16-year-old kid again, watching this for the first time and enjoying it and eating my popcorn. Second time go around, I'm actually taking notes and doing what I need to do to strip away the nostalgia of this movie. But I remember as a kid, and I'm always enthused with this, I love abandoned buildings. I also love abandoned ships. I like abandoned houses. I like seeing people go through abandoned stuff and seeing what they can find and notice and digging up some of the past from each history of each building or ship or whatever it is. So that's what I'm enthused with. As soon as I said ghost ship, haunted ghost ship, and you have ghosts on the ship and stuff, I'm hooked, honestly, right from the start. Like, okay, I love this. And then also, too, you had Mudvayne being in this movie for like a little bit. I'm over there rocking my new metal with Chad. I mean, seriously, this was my soundtrack. If anything, but if I had to give it a proper score, I'd probably go maybe like a 7.5 out of 10, just for the fact that, you know, I love this film. I love the music in it. And also too, like you said, the script is not the strongest, but it's there not to be taken seriously in a sense, because we already know these characters are going to get axed off, but you're also invested into who's going to be the final person, which mm-hmm. they a job of doing that. While they're also doing that, they're also giving a story. So I like how they're actually bringing the past into this as someone else is dying. So I think they do a good job counterbalancing the two things, if I have to say nostalgically on it. And this is me thinking as like a young John from 2002 and working at Movie Gallery. But yeah.
So. Yeah, I feel like they don't pull the punches. It's just like, once we get into, I mean, this is going to be very spoiler heavy, right?
Yep, exactly.
Because we're going to be dissecting. Yeah, they've had time to watch.
Exactly. And guys, just to put this out there, I had to rent this on YouTube for like $4. It's not streaming anywhere. So I'm telling you, it's well worth the $4 pay to actually see this movie.
Okay. It is streaming. I think it's on like Prime, but for some reason I watched it on, it was like AMC Plus, but I do not recommend watching it that way. For some reason, even though like we pay for no ads, I get all of these ad breaks. And if I have never watched the film before, I would have been so pissed off. I mean, I was pissed off just out of,
I don't like interruptions during my movie.
I hate it. It already felt like, at least the version I was watching on the AMC Plus or whatever it is, I felt that version had a bunch of like commercial breaks already edited in that I didn't remember from before. So I don't know. I just did like the Suri thing on my Apple TV, and then that was the version that came up.
Okay.
And so I just pushed play, but I hate it. I'm probably going to unsubscribe from that, you know, package, that channel, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I hate getting interrupted, especially because if you're paying for something. Because it ruins the
tension. Right.
Yeah.
It ruins the whole entire tension of the movie for me. And yes, I grew up in the 90s and 2000s where we had to suffer through commercials, but I'm more enthused with the plot. And if it's interrupted, I'm like, okay, so here's a 30-second slot on a Ford that I can't afford. So, you know, I just like the fact that I can actually watch this on YouTube for $4 and just support a movie that I enjoy. And that's how I did it. And even on Prime, you have to pay like $3.74.
Okay, yeah. Well,
so But still, I enjoy this. So I don't know why this film is actually at a 14%. It has a 38 on the popcorn meter, which doesn't make any sense at all.
I know. I was looking at that and I was reeling, just like totally spiraling over it. Like, we need to update some of these. I think even Rotten Tomatoes is going through the back catalog and updating, you know, their percentages for different films. I hope this one gets an update, or I'm going to have to like finally join Letterboxd and start like writing all these reviews to help the cause.
I've been starting to write more reviews on Letterboxd, to be honest. I've actually got a Letterboxd account and I'm starting to use it instead of just rating. I write out a couple of reviews and stuff too.
Oh, that's great.
I love to show my support, but
yeah.
Welcome aboard, everyone. Night's cruise is complimentary. The drinks are free and the Wi-Fi is possessed by the undead. That's right, we're diving into Ghost Ship, the only movie where the real villain is Margarita time, safely with safety regulations. You mean to tell me they built this whole movie around a ghost boat, but nobody thought to call Ghostbusters? Even they saw the script and said, yeah, we're good. All I'm saying is, your cruise ship starts cutting people in half before the buffet even opens. Maybe it's time to swim home. Tonight, talking cursed gold, ghostly captain, the first act that peaks harder than cholesterol after a movie party. So grab your jackets and your holy water, because this ship's going down faster than the box office after opening weekend. So, scene one. In May 1962, dozens of wealthy passengers are dancing in the ballroom and upon the deck of the Italian ocean liner, Arizona Graza, while an Italian woman, Francesca, sings Senza Fine on the deck, a young girl, Katie Harwood, is sitting alone until the ship's captain offers to dance with her. Elsewhere, Arch's hand presses a lever that unreveals a thin wire cord from a spool. The spool snaps, and the wire slices across the dance floor. Bisecting the dancer, Katie is spread due to her height. I just remember watching this, and it's a cold open. So this is the first thing that turned me on was, what's going on here? There's dancing happening, and everybody's all happy. And then all of a sudden, you see that snap. It feels like a Final Destination movie effort. And then you're seeing everybody just standing still, and then everybody just gets sliced in half. And then you see Katie just screaming on top of her lungs. And I'm like, okay, this movie hooks you the moment of that whole entire thing. And as a matter of fact, I think I put this as my top five opening scenes in a movie, right next to Jaws. But what did you think of this opening scene?
It's so terrific, because I don't know. I didn't revisit the trailer, so I don't know how much was given away for new audiences with the trailer. But if you're going in blind and there's this beautiful romantic light score and it's like very old timey and it's like the font is older and it just seems like you're going into back in time and everybody is gorgeous and dressed up to the nines and we're just getting a feel for what the vibe is on the ship. And then all of a sudden cut to everybody's cut in half. You know, that was so shocking and jarring and just beautifully executed, in my opinion. I love the shock value where, you know, you just, I mean, when I was watching it, I didn't see it coming the first round.
I didn't either. Like, I'm just glued to my TV set.
Chef's kiss. It was perfect. So beautiful, everything. And then I mean, just like as a viewer, and I mean, the acting was incredible. People are like, you know, like parts of their body are still twitching and moving. The choreography of that scene was so impactful. It actually makes me tear up when I watch it. I just get this like visceral reaction to seeing all of that, because it looks, you know, in a way so realistic, and the effects crew and the VFX crew, just like it's seamless. It's a perfect example of how you can do, you know, practical effects in camera effects and, you know, mirror and marry it with the VFX as well.
I agree, because here's the thing. I love visual effects. We talked about this before. I like visual effects over CGI, but the way they meshed it together and marinated it together, I thought it was perfect. And then we're just as shocked as Katie is when all this is happening. Like, when we see that final wire with the blood dripping down and her screaming, it sets the tone for this movie and what we're expected out of this movie. So I feel like that it knows its identity from the start of this film to get people hooked to the point where I don't feel like it's misleading anyway or anything like that, because some openings to a movie, especially cold openings, where I'm going to be reviewing The Faculty next week, there's two cold openings in that movie, and I feel like they were good. It was good just for that one opening. And sometimes it can be where, does this movie know its own identity? And this one actually does, and it doesn't play it safe. And it grabs you, it's horrifying, and this whole entire thing, and you're like, you're right about the whole entire handwriting of the classic 1950s style of the way they did this, and then something so horrible happening through this whole entire brightness and this darkness that is this catastrophic event that happened. And then Katie's actually the last one to see everyone get split in half.
Yeah, it's so romantic and innocent, and it just sets the tone exactly what you said with how the whole film is. And you also get little peeks into what's actually going on, too. Like, we see some different characters that'll come up later as well. And just like these little, I mean, when you rewatch it, you can see these like little winks and stuff that are very subtle. But as a, you know, a fan, it's I know what's coming up.
Right, exactly. So now we're going to go with 40 years later, a boat salvage crew, Captain Sean Murphy, Marianne Epps, Greer Dodge, Murder and Santos are celebrating a success at a bar when Jack Furman, a Canadian Weather Service pilot, approaches them and says he spotted a vessel running adrift at the Bering Sea because the ship is in internal waters. It can be claimed by whoever brings it to port. The crew sets out to the Arctic Warrior, an ocean salvage tugboat. As the tugboat makes its way to that last location of the ship, Santos, the driver of the Arctic Warrior, notices a ship-sized icon on the scanner. So let's talk about the fact that, you know, you're being introduced to these characters for the very first time. You know that this woman is really good at what she does. She's a underwater welder. All these other men are... I like how they actually establish a woman that's actually strong and the characterization of her and knowing that she's actually the best at her job, that these men feel comfortable with her to be able to handle this one man or woman job to where she has to go underneath the water. Then she has to solder that piece together. And she only has a matter of so many seconds before it collapses. And I'm just amazed at how they really built that up. And she doesn't fall under this thing that we see in other horror movies where it's like Dazzle in Distress. She's a very strong character for early 2000s, which is something I'm really am proud of that they did, because even during like later on in the movie, she does not drop down from that. So I really like that.
Yeah, I would say she's the one who's saving all the boys, you know, all right. Her crew, they're all the damsels in distress, you know. She's like plugging them out of the water and trying to save them. She doesn't do a really good job at her job, but she tries at least.
Right, but it makes us believe as an audience, like, she's done this before and that she's the best that she can handle, even though, you know, it's just one job, and we're supposed to believe the fact that she's good at what she does. There's no other job.
No, I meant, like, keeping them alive. No, she's good at soldering. She's good
I gotcha.
You know, like, keeping everybody in line and in order. And it's, like, part her, it's her, like, ship, too, or something, right? She's, like, an owner in this, right? Something like that.
It's, like, she's kind of like a tugboat captain kind of thing, where she's being able to handle these guys on the ship, even though she's like not the captain, but it's like she knows these guys. She's attached to these guys. These guys are family, and it actually does feel like these guys are actually family to her. And that's something that I really enjoyed with it. And yes, she does do kind of a horrible job at trying to keep them alive because everybody's separated on this big, massive ship. and everybody's getting killed off, and the poor girl, she's just trying everything she can to help them.
Yeah, we can't, it's kind of jarring to go from the past to present day, and they're trying to fix some situation, right, with another boat, kind of just leading up to, like, explaining each character's, like, the kind of their job on the ship and almost in the film as well, right?
Exactly.
It's kind of that, like, breakfast table kind of explanation of what's going on with all the characters.
And I like that. I like that little breakfast-size brunch kind of style of actually doing it. And then they celebrate, and then we have Joseph Quinn from Dexter come in during their celebration, which is, I didn't even realize he was even in this movie.
Oh, Desmond funny. Harrington.
Yeah, I didn't even realize Desmond was even in this movie. I thought my first time I ever seen him was in Dexter. So I was like, I had to pause it. I said, my wife's like, what's up? I said, I think that's Joseph Quinn from Dexter. And I looked at it, and I'm like, I turned into Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm like, that's him. That's the guy. but still, just comes over to the table. They don't even know him from Adam, and he's expecting them. He's like, oh yeah, man, not a problem. You know, there's a ship out here. I'll take you to it. Not a problem. But here's the thing. I love how they're questioning him, and they're like, well, if this is such a job for one person or whatever, why don't you do it? Because it's out in waters. There's no way I can get a Coast Guard over there or anything like that. I have to have higher help, and we'll split this any way you want. And then you have that thing where it's like, well, I don't want to split it any way I want. This is how we're going to split it. I forgot how much they actually split it for, but they make the negotiations. And then he's like, there's one other condition. What? I have to be on there with you. He's like, no, that's not happening. And I don't blame the guy. I don't blame him. I would not bring this guy who just wants me as a hire to bring him aboard, not know him or anything, and just trust his word that this ship is out there. You know, because how do you know? He could actually kill everybody on the boat on the way over there, and that's it. And I'm like, I don't trust you. But he also tells him this, well, look, I can hire anybody else around here. I guess I'll just go ahead and do that. And it's just like a hustle move. It's like, well, since you don't want to do it, I'll just hire these other guys at this port and see what they have to do. But I like that whole entire interaction. I love the bar. I love how the environment is in this. I love the set piece of it. Everything for this scene definitely works for the initial setup.
Yeah, it's such an awkward scene because Murphy's like, anything you have to say to me, you can say in front of my crew. And it's like, on one hand, I get it. He's trying to be respectful. Like, everybody seems to get like a fair cut. Like, everybody does their job. Everybody, like, there's no hierarchy, and everybody gets a fair cut of whatever deal they're making or whatever ship they, whatever it is that they do, how they make money. It seems like it's like fairly distributed between them. Right. But how awkward, like what a weird, like it was just very strange for me that moment. And then, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, it's very weird because it's, like what you were saying, they don't know him, you know, supposedly it's like the character, I think his name Jack, he doesn't know them either. And so, yeah, it's like they kind of feel like one of them, it's like either a wild goose chase
right
for the crew, or the other guy's gonna get like screwed over by all of them, you know, taking what's rightfully quote unquote his, you know?
Exactly. Because I wouldn't want to trust this guy on board with me or anything. And yes, this scene is awkward, but I think it's awkward for a reason. It's that awkwardness of this guy interrupting our celebration to tell us about a damn boat ship that's out in the middle of the ocean while I'm trying to celebrate with my teammates. Hey, look, we on a successful job. And here comes this moron and saying, hey, look, I got this ship, da-da-da-da-da. I want to hire you. And I'm like, no, dude, go away. But at the same time, they can't say that because they also need the money, too. Everybody has their own situations. Like, you have one person that wants to rebuild his car or wants the car, which would, you know what I'm saying? You have,
yeah, somebody else is getting married. Like, they all have something at stake, which this would completely change their lives. But also, they're like, while Jack is offering such a great opportunity, they're also like ragging on him and making fun of him, like, oh, you found a boat in the ocean. Wow, good job.
Golf clap. But, you know, I think this scene really works. And then you finally get them on board. And Santos is the one who is actually obsessed with the car, of trying to get the car, because he's actually talking. We're thinking that he's talking to a, this is like later on in the film where we're thinking he's talking to his girlfriend in the picture, but it's actually a car. But he's the one who wants the car. But I like this whole entire deal where you have him listen to Mudvayne, just rocking out with the heavy metal music. And then you have the awkward guy who interrupts everything. He wants to be on the boat, but yet he gets seasick. Well, and, you know, I get the fact it's for humor, but if you're a guy who saw this boat and you know you're seasick, why would you go out there in the ocean in the first place?
Well, I feel like that's a ploy that this little devil boy is using to make it seem like he's not a threat to them. You know, like, they're definitely over him. They've got their sea legs. He's not going to be a problem. And as they'll find out, he's their biggest problem. Yes. Besides almost running into the ship, which we just glazed over, how the ship goes invisible and they can't see it. And then we almost lose one of the guy, Dodge, right? He gets thrown over because they have to floor it in reverse, which I thought was a fun scene too.
Right.
Because that can start racing, because you're like, is this a real ship? Is it not? What's going on? I mean, we have the cold open, but it's like
we as an audience
figuring out,
right?
You know, yeah, exactly. For the
crew, like we as an audience, right? It's like Sleepy Hollow, for instance. Everybody else in this small town have seen the Headless Horseman, but we are also the townspeople in a sense who's watching this movie, and we've seen this happen. We've seen this ship actually does exist, but these characters, they haven't seen this. They think it's just a mythological thing that this guy is making up. And I love how it's actually storming out. Santos is rocking out to Mudvayne. Then you also have him looking at the scanner. And he calls up Murphy. Hey, look, I found something on the scanner. Murphy comes up there. He goes, what's up? He goes, I seen something on the scanner. And he goes, there's nothing there. Are you sure that there's something there? He goes, yeah, there's something there. And then all of a sudden, you see the massive size ship, and you realize how big that ship actually is and how close they were actually to actually hitting it in the storm.
Yes. Also, it's almost like an urban legend because the ship just disappeared, right, in the 60s, and there's lore. And Murphy seems to know he's read a book for dummies on this ship because he knows every little fact throughout. Right. And I'm like surprised that none of the other seaworthy crew, they've never heard of this, this disappearing ship. But, as we'll find out, he just knows every little thing about it. And it's kind of interesting.
Right. My question is this though, if you've been traveling with Murphy all this time, wouldn't they already know that he knows about ships?
I know. It's like being a friend with somebody who has a favorite film or a favorite actor or something like that. Like, they would be spouting out facts all the time, in conversations that have nothing to do with this ship. He's probably like, oh, by the way, did you know that this and this is like the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but with this ghost ship?
Right. I could just see him in his own private quarters where he just has a book on ships and ghost ships and mythology. And nobody, in his spare time, somebody else is driving the ship, driving the tugboat, and here he is on reading a book on mythological ships.
See, that would have been a really good scene that if we went into his little lodging area and he did have a shelf full of ship books and stuff, and he slammed it on the table to show people, that would have been a little more cohesive. But I mean, it's funny with this. With this film, it's like you can't ask too many questions with how do people know this or why are they spitting out these facts? It's like just to get the story going.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right on that. It's just that he makes it look like he's the smartest person on the boat while everybody's like, ooh, look, he knows a lot about ships. Oh, this this used to be, no one could actually find the ship. Oh, look, Murphy knows some stuff. But, you know, but yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from with that. But it, just to have a little bit of cohesiveness and stuff like that, and I understand that we're just here for the journey, just as the other crew members are also here for the journey and not knowing anything. So we actually feel like that we're part of that that crew that doesn't know anything, and we're learning from Murphy, though, too. So you can have your cake and eat it, too, in a sense. It's like, okay, I can overlook this uncohesive thing and act like that I'm just going in for the tour of Murphy and just learning from him. So that's also another interesting way of actually looking at it.
Yes.
So now, using the radio, Murphy attempts to contact the nearby ships. As they carry on, Santos notices a large object ahead. He quickly reserves the tugboat before slamming it into the object. After a close inspection, they find an ocean liner. They discover the ship is the Antonina Graza, which was believed to be lost at sea when they prepared to tow it. They discover it contains a large quantity of gold. Strange things begin to happen. Epps claims to have seen a little girl on the stairwell. Dodge finds a digital watch on the bridge, and Greer claims to have a woman singing and seducing him throughout the ship. Epps and Fairman discover the corpses of another salvage crew. They decide to leave the ship but take the gold. But an invisible force opens a gas valve in the engine room, and the Arctic Warrior explodes as the engine started killing Santos and leaving the others stranded. So let's talk about the fact that now that we're on board this ship, and, you know, we discover it's the Antonina Graza, and they are actually deciding, hey, look, we're going to try and tow this ship because they've done it before so that it can work at any situation. But at the same time, your boat is so small, and this ship is so massive in size. In the words of Jaws, you're going to need a bigger boat.
Like, yeah, I know. I was like, in my blonde brain, I was like, the math isn't really mathing right now.
But still, like,
how are they going to get it going? I mean, I feel like it's just going to break kind of in half after all of, like, it's so rusted. Which is so, can we talk about the ship itself in the film? Yeah. How fantastic, you know, I was doing some research, and it's like a miniature, and it looks incredible.
It really does.
You know, they also did some like CGI, you know, stuff too, building it and everything. And then the sets, I just love.
The set pieces are awesome.
You know, when it's in its modern time, it's so gross and wet. Like, everything's like, I feel like I would be clammy and everything would smell like, you know, like the ocean and moldy. Yeah, just like super gross. Like, the carpet would be soggy, you know, like I'm getting
and
the rust big ick.
And all the things that you don't want to touch, right?
Yeah.
And I could actually smell the mold off this ship whenever they go in it. And
this,
I'm like,
design, yeah.
And I love seeing the broken pieces of this vessel. And there's this mystery element of what happened, because we already know what happened. I like how they're trying to figure it out. But also like how you have where you actually have Murphy goes, be careful where you're stepping because you can fall through because it's so rusted. But you're absolutely right. I can feel the texture of everything that they're touching, the point where I need Germex just to cover my hand and everything I see.
Yeah, like, I love the details. I love the texture of it. I love just all the colors, just the depth of it. It just feels like a real, even though I don't think we're ever on a ship in this film. It was all like sets, but it has that weight. And I love it when films use actual sets and build actual sets, because there's a weight and a feel that, like, you can't get.
That's magical.
We're not. And then also it's reflective in the actual actors, like having something to play off of, you know, like, ew, I don't want to get this goop on me kind of stuff. Just as a human, right. Let alone as, you know, being a character in that fun little universe. But I just love it
So I love it too, but you're right though. I'd rather have something that I can see and touch versus trying to, you know, CGI. I like some CGI, like I said, but I like, if I was an actor, I would like the visual touch of something and seeing what I'm actually doing versus interacting with something invisible and not knowing what the final product is going to be and wondering what my, if I'm actually delivering the right performance from this, because I'm not seeing what I'm touching. I'm not seeing how atmospheric this whole entire ship is, but with doing the miniatures and doing the set pieces, you're actually touching things. You're actually looking at how massive this set is. You're looking at certain things and you're like, okay, I can actually do something with this. Maybe some improvisation. Maybe I can actually add something to the scene. It's hard to do that with a green screen. And I think they do a fantastic job of laying everything down and also too showing the past of something that's so broken. The ship is the brokenness of those lives that were lost at sea.
Oh yeah, it's very, very haunted feeling. I mean, to your point about being able to react to like having like a green screen and not being able to see what's around you, I actually thought that the actor Isaiah Washington, who plays Greer, when we're doing the like when in the ballroom when everything is going back.
Oh, I love that.
I love that scene. And they did that with green screen. And I thought his reactions were so honest and pure and just hot choices. I thought that he did a fantastic job with that because I was watching some behind the scenes stuff and he's just actually doing those. I'm a dancer, so I love a physical actor. I love choreography. And he was just hitting those beats and movements. And I really felt like the ballroom and the chandelier, I felt like everything was just...
The look on his face when that chandelier comes up was fantastic.
So shocking. Yes. Nailed it out of the park for me. He did fantastic. Everybody is like him. Not everybody can do that.
But I do like that. I do like that performance by Isaiah because we're just as shocked as he is to see all these pieces coming together and we're actually seeing a piece of history happening, even though he's being seduced by this woman. As a matter of fact, even before that happens, he's being seduced by her, by Francesca. And he goes, I think I've seen a woman. And I was like, just started laughing. And then you also have Epps, who also sees the little girl. She goes, well, I think I've seen a little girl. And then that's when you have Fairman, who winds up saying, you saw a little girl. And then that's when, if I haven't seen this for the first time, I would be like, okay, so he's just worried about her. Me seeing this and knowing who he is, I'm like, red flags are going up because of the fact of, wait, you can actually see the dead when you're not supposed to see. And I'm about to be made. So I do like the fact that it has a rewatchability. If you haven't, if you already seen it, it has that rewatchability to go back and say, I missed a few things, and it actually enhances the experience.
Yeah, I feel like every time I rewatch this film, I kind of see something new or pick up on, you know, something new. I think it's a really great film.
I do too.
I mean, it's not 100% perfect for me, but I think I don't know. I don't know why people like hate on it so much.
I think it's shocking. It's shocking. I think there's a lot that they can actually go with and make this movie in modern day time, you know, in a sense, but to enhance the storyline a little bit. But other than that, though, I think it's actually this setup is really good. The point where I'm actually eating my popcorn, stuffing my face with popcorn, and just having a good time with it all over again, even though I'm actually seeing this and trying to strip away the nostalgia. And it's just so hard for me to be able to do that with these scenes because of how good and well balanced and how they place each actor in these scenes, in these situations, and they're playing off of it. And I'm just not much invested as I was in 2000. And this is what I wanted to say too, even whenever they find the gold and they're like, oh, we can split this what many ways. And they try to get it. And then of course they found the rats, and then they wind up finding the gold, and then they try to take it off the ship. And that's when things start going awry.
Okay, which is so funny. Okay, can we go back to the rats for a minute? Aren't they the cutest, fluffiest, cleanest
That's true.
Little rats that you have ever seen. And I'm always shocked to see them because I figure they're going to be all like gnarled up or, you know, just like a little bit of gel or put something on them, you know, but they're just so perfect and fluffy and healthy
yeah,
looking.
They're not
and
wet.
Also,
they're not...
and yeah, in my mind, I'm like, how are there rats here? Another thing, don't ask questions. Don't ask too many questions.
But I agree with you. I mean, I think it would be more haunting if you actually had them maybe having some of that witness to them for being in that crate for so long.
Yeah, I mean, where has this ship been? How are there rats on this ship? You know what I mean? Like,
I would
it hasn't gone
skeletons.
Into like exactly. I know. I mean, I don't know if we needed anything in there, but I guess for some reason we needed something. Like, as the writer, I'm trying to think. Like, we needed a reason for them to notice these crates of gold, right? Because like we couldn't just put them in the car.
Right.
You know, and it's also the lightest gold ever. You know,
that
like,
is pure gold. Like that is like yellow
like,
gold.
Like we should have like put a little bit more weight into that, you know, or acting with the gold.
I feel like they should have at least had dust on them and everything, and they have to just clean the dust off of it, and you see pillars of dust, and then there's the gold.
Yeah, I mean, minor little issues, but it's just like, it's always a little silly when I look at them, you know, when that scene comes up.
Gotcha. But then I also like how that's why that's happening to the swimming pool, because whenever you see Epps, she falls down into the swimming pool because that's where she sees the girl. And you see shells on the underneath, you know, where the swimming pool is because it's dried now. But we as an audience don't know the rest of the story. So I like the fact that they hid that from us. I'm like, well, is that left over from the other people? Because we see a digital watch. And did those people kill each other? And because they had cabin fever and because they don't, maybe their ship also got blown up or something while trying to move this. And did they actually, it has like, you know, the movie, The Thing, it kind of has that kind of feel to it where I'm thinking they both, all the, that whole entire crew pretty much drew each other crazy to the point where they had killed each other. So that's where my mind was going.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely getting these like little breadcrumbs of like what happened. Yeah, because we're not sure what time period, because we saw in the beginning that there was some kind of massacre that happened. And then we're kind of debating, oh, is this, you know, did this happen in modern day with what you were saying with the watch, or is this in the past? We don't know. But yeah, it's definitely laying the stage for what happened and gives us a glimpse into like, oh, that's like kind of weird. You know, like, I don't think most people are shooting like guns into the pool.
No. But the thing that I found that was really interesting, though, while they're moving this, the swim pools ends up filling up with blood. And then you see the bodies from...
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Looking for something new? Try fencing, the Olympic and Paralympic sport that mixes speed, strategy, and fun. It's like chess meets cardio. Quick feet, quick decisions, and a satisfying beep when you score a point. Kids, teens, and adults can start anytime. No experience needed, and many clubs have loaner gear. Coaches teach fundamentals and safety from day one. Find a beginner class near you at usafencing.org/tryfencing. That's usafencing.org/tryfencing.
The ghost. There too, I had goosebumps with that. I thought that was an interesting way of actually saying, just because we don't see something supernatural doesn't mean that there's nothing there.
Yes, I feel like I loved how they had the ghost almost kind of hinting towards their own story. I love the thought of ghosts being trapped in their final moments or in their own loops. You know, like how you get stuck, let's say, like, you get stuck in a loop of, like, you know, how you died or something like that. And I love that we get little images of that. Now, okay, can I pose a question to you?
Yeah.
We're mentioning, like, oh, was this cabin fever? Do you feel as a viewer that, like, it's still up in the air if there's something supernatural happening, like, as you when you're watching it? Or do you find that, like, you definitely know this is haunting? Like, there is no question about it. Do you think?
I feel like there's no question that this is haunting, because we see the bodies filled up with the bodies and stuff like that, with the swimming pool, with the blood. But also, too, we see the digital watch. So that tells me this little twerp probably hired another crew to do the same shit that this other person did, that they're doing. So it's just him luring these people in and taking souls. So that's what I was thinking, though, too. I'm like, this guy had been hard at work. And getting, he probably hangs out at the same spot on every Monday. And it's like,
interesting.
And just listening to people's comments, hey, you good? You want some money? Yeah. Well, I have this, there's a ship out in the ocean. Look, I got pictures. I could just imagine the bartender, here he fucking goes again. Here we go. Right. But, you know, I could just see the bartender, like, here we go. Every Monday, this guy, I could just see him, yeah, come here. There's no ship. Every single day, nobody wants to be this guy. This is what I'm thinking, though. But I just think, like, every Monday, this guy comes into the same bar. And so, to be, he hires these people, and he winds up doing, they wind up getting trapped on the ship. They die. He puts the watch in something, and that's how that happened. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking he already hired another crew. That crew died. He took those souls. Now he's ready to take down these guys.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, at this point, I don't know if I know, like, as a viewer, if I know anything about him kind of being the ferryman, you know, getting all these souls for, let's say, like, Satan. I think he's terrible at his job because, right, he's supposed to get all of these souls on the ship. And I mean, I always kind of question, it's like, did he need this crew to save this ship from sinking, or is that another ploy? Is it fine? You know what I mean? Because he has this telekinetic ability to disrupt, you know, in our universe, like the ship and moving different things. And I think it's all him, like, setting up these traps. And also, I mean, as a bigger thought too, it kind of feels like the seven deadly sins, kind of, you know,
greed,
it's like
lust.
All of, we're hitting all of these things, and it's like Murphy has a drinking problem. He's being seduced by alcohol. You know, Greer is about to get married. I don't think he's ready for it.
He's
having
lusting.
Maybe he's having some second thoughts. I mean, who wouldn't? She's gorgeous.
Right. I would be like, well, it's not cheating, but it's a good. I'll give you a pass.
Yeah, he got the shining. She was ugly the whole time.
Right, exactly. He was actually sober, which is actually even bad.
Like, no, I mean, she's like so intoxicating. I can totally understand. She has this like wonderful charisma to her. And it's interesting, you probably know too from doing research, the actress, she's actually Italian, and she didn't speak a word of English. And so they had to get an interpreter on set for the director to be able to give her notes and like help direct her scenes, and why she doesn't have any dialogue other than in Italian, because I think her part was going to be a bit bigger, or she would have had more dialogue with the different characters. I'm guessing that's kind of what was hinted, what
I
saw.
I think it works though for her, though. I think
I like it. I like her being mysterious. I mean, she's so gorgeous. I love her dress. I love everything about her. And I love when we have that scene later on that we'll go into later, which is like, that's like kind of my second best scene, is where we get the whole flashback from Katie's perspective, and even more so of like more than what she saw, you know.
Right. But what do you think about the gas being turned on by a ghostly being. And at first I'm like, I wish they would actually done a little bit more on that, because I'm like, is that Furman trying to collect the souls now going back after rewatching it? Is he collecting these souls? What's going on here? Because I would love to see a lot more into it. Is he orchestrating this? Because we know all these other ghosts are innocent bystanders because we see them floating up. So it's like he's the only being on this ship that is controlling the narrative.
Yeah, that's kind of where I felt like it was just like a hurry up and let's get going to move the plot, because like we couldn't give them an exit, you know, but like we had to get rid of that. It's kind of like in other movies, it's like we got to get rid of the car, you know, like how do we get rid of this other ship that they could just literally go and leave? Because at a certain point, it's like as a human, you would want to save your life more than like dealing with the gold, because you can always get more money, right? But you can only get one life unless you're stuck on a ship and you've got to be a ghost forever.
Right. It's kind of like,
go ahead.
It's kind of like saying, okay, guys, well, look, we're about 30 minutes in. There's no dead bodies. We tease a ghost here. Look, we need to make this time slot. So let's go ahead. Let's get someone killed right now. So they won't want to blow up the boat and everything mentioned. There's no escapism whenever it comes down to the boat blowing up. Now they're stranded on this ship. So I definitely like where they went with it. It's just me questioning one little tiny thing that I can actually ignore, but it's making me wonder.
Yeah, and also it was kind of like, what qualified Santos to get the mark? Like, was there some, like, did he I don't remember going into his backstory. Like, he seemed like he was kind of a jerky guy. Like, maybe like I wouldn't want to, I don't know if I would want to hang out with him, but I was kind of a little confused, like how his soul got trapped. Or if it did, I don't know. Cause it seemed like it was Jack kind of taking over his persona, his look, to kind of mess with Murphy later. So it's kind of up,
like a Nightmare on Elm Street kind of vibe.
Yeah, right? So I don't even know. Maybe he's stuck. Maybe he's still out in the ocean. His soul's stuck. Or maybe he went to I don't know.
Right? So now they attempt to repair the Antonia Graza and seal it back to land. Greer encounters Francesca, the singer he heard, who seduces him and then leads him off a parasite to his death. Captain Murphy, after entering the captain's cabin, finds the ghost of the Antonia Graza's captain, who explains that covered the gold from a singing Lorelei, along with the sole survivor. He shows Murphy a picture of the survivor, who he recognizes. He rushes out to the rest of the crew, but a supernatural force causes him to see everyone he meets as the burned ghost of Santos, causing the crew to think he has gone mad and lock him in the drain fish tank. So we were talking about how much we liked the whole entire thing of the seduction of Epps. Not of Epps. You know who I'm talking about.
Francesca. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we see her luring him in, and I like this thing where he's like, oh, he starts undoing her dress a little bit, and then it's not cheating if she's a ghost, and then she just falls through the shaft. And he's gone. And I'm like, wow, she manipulated the whole entire thing. But I also like the look of her afterwards, because it's not like a skeleton, because you're thinking like it's going to be a skeleton face or something. But no, it's a decayed look. And I liked a little bit of the subtleness with it rather than having that decayed skeleton look.
It was definitely, I mean, like, I don't know if that's what they were going for, but it reads, always was like a little bit silly for me. It reminded me of is it House on Haunted Hill? Yeah. No. Maybe. Yes. But like that kind of like all of a sudden scare. I thought it was great. And I liked her makeup and then how she was aged. She was older. She was old the whole time.
Right. But also another thing, though, Anastasia, that I liked, though, too, was like when she's watching him from a distance, because remember, he sees the cigarette in one of the scenes. And he's walking and he's like, that sounds doesn't. Puts it back down, walks away. But as he's walking away, you see Francesca over there looking at him. And I love that thing of the ghost looking at someone that's living is like, I got you now. I know what you're after. So I like that. I like that scene. And then I like the captain scene. I definitely like them explaining that and not showing us who the person is in the picture to give us a little bit of a mystery.
Yes, I thought it was so great. I mean, it's so chilling. And I mean, with the captain of the ship, you just like, I don't know, like my heart goes out to him because it's like, you always think like the captain, he's kind of like the father of the ship and he goes down with the ship. And I just thought that that was so creepy and eerie the way that they had him kind of like just ghostly come in and then explaining things, but he's like explaining it in Italian and they're having this kind of like, you know, dialogue back and forth about what was going on. And he shows them, you know, the, what do you call it? Like the ledger for the ship. And they go into the history of what happened. He's like, this, you know, this guy's your guy, watch out. And I've seen him, you know, around you guys, like the captain's been keeping an eye on them, you know, while they're there, I guess. It feels like the ghosts are watching everything, but maybe Jack is the one who's like, I feel like he's the evil force into like actively killing this whole crew, you know, like the ones who are alive.
I agree.
I mean, that's my feeling.
I can see that, to be honest with you, because I'm thinking the same thing here. I'm thinking that Jack is doing this whole entire thing. He's the one who's orchestrating. Like I said before, and you know, we don't get this. I didn't notice this in a stage. I don't know if you did too, but I noticed the fact that you don't see him through the whole entire movie up until the very end. So he's very suspect to the point where that mystery element, if you're the first time viewer and you don't realize it, that he's not in there the whole entire time and you're like, oh, who is it or anything, you'd be shocked. But for us, we're like, I started noticing, I'm like, he hasn't been in this whole entire movie since the first guy got blown up or whenever they found the gold. And that was it.
Yeah. I always kind of forget about him as like, because it's so like, he wants to be so unassuming. He wants people not to like worry about him. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they try to make him a little bit forgetful because he's just like this guy who's excited about the treasure, excited about like getting this ship, you know? And so as the viewer, it's kind of like, I almost forget a little bit because I'm worried about the crew now. And they're kind of my first concern, like what's going on. And then like the whole thing about, you know, like what's going on with the little girl, Katie, what's underlining, like what's happening? Because at first it's like in the beginning with that whole cold open scene, it doesn't feel like it was planned in a way. You know what I mean? Like, no. It just seemed like it was an accident. And now we're getting vibes with the pool shooting with other crew going missing, that there's something like, you know, evil lurking around the corner, that there's some entity, because we see the little girl. It's almost like she's like trying to help them in a way. Like she pops up a little bit. And then there's moments where she does reach out and help, try to help Epps or warn Epps, you know, and it, like, right before Santos gets it, she's like yelling off of the ship, you know, don't start it. And I feel like that's Jack who jumps up and takes her away.
See, I paused it right there too. I'm like, is that Jack?
Did we get answers, or is that kind of?
It happens way too fast.
Okay.
Where you all you see is like a shadowy figure and that's it. But it makes sense for it to be Jack.
Right? I feel like he's like the puppet master behind the scenes, pulling all of the strings, because it feels like, other than maybe, you know, there's a moment where Francesca, she can kill, like, but like people step into that. It's not like an action that she's not pushing. She didn't push him over, you know, and kill him. It was his choice. And that's the thing too. It's like these people are sinning and then they go to him and get marked, right?
Right. Basically, he's, think about it, he's a foreman for the devil, probably. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 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 He's a ferryman.
Right. But, you know what though? But I do like the fact that this girl, this little girl, is actually the innocent one out of everything, and she's helping people rather than they could actually pull on the innocent to be the one that has a plot twist of her doing stuff. But no, but instead, it's her helping them, wanting to discover everything that happened so she can rest in peace and stuff. So I like that. I definitely like that. And then you're right, Jack is actually the orchestra of the person that's pulling all the strings. But I know that I mentioned the fact that we forget all about him. The characters also forget all about him because nobody even mentions where's Jack at. They're all consumed with what's going on around them to the point where he can disappear and manipulate them even more into the background. And even that one scene where we actually have Murphy, who they lock up because they think he's wacko with everything, and now he's locked away. So, yeah, I liked how they played on that because that also feels like the thing all over again. But let's go ahead. Let's talk about the next scene, though. Epps meets Katie, who reveals what happened on the Graza. The sole survivor of the Larielli convinced the crew of the Graza to murder the passengers in order to claim the gold for themselves. One of the ship's officers turned on the rest of the crew and killed them all, only to be killed himself by Francesca. Another man then joined Francesca in an embrace and walked away as a large hook swung in her face, killing her. The man is revealed as Jack Ferriman, who was actually a demonic spirit who masterminded the massacre. So let's talk about that one scene, because I think there's a lot happening here. And I love the plot twist of this, even though we know it, but I love how the music is playing as we're seeing this happen. And we're seeing the accident happen all over again, but we're also seeing Katie, who's actually a survivor, was being taken by the mob, and you're seeing people being executed in the swimming pool, which now we know why there's a bunch of bodies being piled up over there. We see her going through different rooms, and you know, Epps actually saw her body being hung, and we actually thought, well, maybe she hung herself or something. That was my first initial thought was suicide, but once you actually seen it, like, oh, they hung her after witnessing everything, and they can't have witnesses. This whole thing was about the gold. But what did you think about the whole mob thing and everybody backstabbing each other? Here's the thing. I like how Francesca comes in there. This has, like, Dark Knight vibes with Heath Ledger, where everybody's backstabbing each other. And then Francesca thinks that she's going to get away with it, but instead she winds up getting killed by Jack.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like one of those perfectly choreographed sequences. I love how there wasn't a line of dialogue, but you know exactly what's happening. You know, we get this perfect view of how things just imploded on themselves and, you know, just everybody. I mean, it's like first we see that everybody was poisoned, you know, and they're having reactions to that. And while people are dancing, they don't even notice that others, you know, it's like, that's how they get rid of half of the people. It's like they, you know, they kill all of the chefs, you know, in the kitchen, and then they poison everybody and they pretend to be these other crew members. And then we've got the whole thing with the dancing and the wire, you know, that we saw before, but we see it in a different, you know, we see a little bit of an extended version, you know, and then we get to see, like, it's interesting seeing Katie's reaction to rewatch. It's like getting stuck in that loop that I was talking about before. And I love those moments, those sequences. And then Epps gets to also see everything from, like, Katie's viewpoint and beyond. I love how it's like betrayal to betrayal to, you know, like what you were saying, right? It's like everybody's, you know, betraying the next person. And I thought that was, I did not see the hook coming. I mean, everything happens so fast and seamless, and it's so seductive. I mean, I feel like I'm in a music video with the song, which I love the song choice. I think it's so killer. And, you know, like, it's so good. And I just thought that was such an evil death for her, you know, and it looks so good. And she's such a great actress to, like, portray that happening to her. I it just, it's one of my favorite, you know, this whole sequence. I mean, it's so sad to watch. Like, I tear up for these certain things because I just feel so bad, so much empathy for the innocents, all of these people. Because it's like, you think about, like, you know, like in the story, it's like they were going, you know, to a different country or wherever they're supposed to go. And, you know, like their family, wait, all of this kind of like stuff. I don't know. I think past the movie, you know what I mean? Like in the movie logic of it. But I thought it was so good. And I'm glad that you loved it too.
I loved it. I loved the music with it. I loved everything within it. And then it's revealed that it's Jack. And she has that look of surprise, Epps does, of like, you mother effer. You gotta be kidding. You know? Because all this is because of him. And I also like how he leaves the mark on Francesca as well. Like an Indian rug burn kind of way of him doing it. And I'm like, oh, I definitely like how he ends up doing that. And it actually burns into this. So I like that scene.
Yeah, it singes in, right? Yeah, that was an interesting choice. I like that too. Like it's like hell's fire. And yeah, what a dynamic reveal. Didn't, you know, like when I was first watching it, didn't see it coming because I just like, he just comes off as like kind of a goofy doofus, right?
Right.
And so to see that he's there's this put together, you know, guy who's the leader of the pack and he, you know, it's all, he's doing everything. And I feel like he, as the character is like, also like when he got on board, he's like whispering, you know, he's like the devil on your shoulder whispering, yep. You know, telling you exactly what you want to hear. And that's how everybody, you know, just the ball rolling and then they're killing everybody.
Exactly. And so now we have Epps then rushes to Murphy only to find him drowned in the new flooded fish tank. Although devastated, she deduces the Furman alert the salvage team to the Gaza to repair the sinking ship and that the best way to fight him is to sink it. Epps rushes to the bridge to tell Dodge they must leave, but Jack shows up before she can even mention it to him when Epps sets off to find Munder. Furman starts questioning Dodge about his feelings for her. Dodge grows suspicious and unnerved, leading him to shoot Furman, who appears dead, but looks up when Dodge leaves down below. Murder is crushed between two gears. Yeah, Munder is actually crushed between two gears while fixing a block pump. After seeing his remains, Epps sets explosives. This is Dodge shows up, saying they should take the gold and run. Epps refuses, then especially questions Dodge, and even laughs, and morphs into the demonic Furman, revealing the farmer's fate. Fairman describes himself as a salvager of souls, a job he says he earned by a lifetime of sin. He explains that since Katie was a child and never committed a true sin, he cannot control her as he does the evil ghost. So long as the Alana Antonia Graza remains afloat, he can use it as a trap and keep management satisfied. Detonates the explosives and sinks the Graza. Katie helps Epps escape and sink in the ship. She is left in the debris as the souls trapped on the ship ascended. So we have a lot going on within this one scene. So
that's so much.
Yeah.
Like, let's bring it back a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Rewind a little. So when we see Murphy in the tank and we finally see that he has the picture of Jack, I was kind of like, excuse me, who is that supposed to be? Like, because he's so sunken in, he looks like a totally different person. I'm like, how is Murphy in his like scotch goggles, like after he's had a couple drinks, how does he put two and two together? Like that doesn't really look like him. I was actually surprised that they had him look so sickly and not like himself. But again, maybe that's like to put people at ease while he, you know, it seems like he tries to, you know, just make it seem like he's not a threat to anybody. So maybe in that time period that would have like put people more at ease, like why is he the only survivor? Oh, because right. He's like on death's door.
Exactly, make him look like he's the one who survived. And you know, but yeah, I think it's just the thing is, like, he's an innocent bystander and he's just happened to be in this bad situation and nothing. And all these other people didn't really have a lot more stuff dealing with it. I don't know. But still, I think that it actually worked. I really like it. Then what did you think about where now he's manipulating Dodge about his feelings for Epps? And, you know, the whole entire movie, he doesn't mention anything about her or her feelings. There was no connection. Then all of a sudden he decides, during this whole entire time, oh, I'm in love with Epps.
That's another like little story structure thing that I had a little bit of a quibble with, which I know is difficult. Like when you're dealing with this kind of a huge project and you have so many effects, all of this stuff. But like when I was thinking about it, I was like, they should have hinted towards, like, I don't recall seeing any hints. Like I would have had him open a door for her or like give her a little bit of a vibe or something, you know? Cause like, right. I just felt like that came like totally out of left field for me. And then for him to continually like, almost like pressure her and put him like, you know, like, even she's kind of like, what are you talking about? Right. You know, so maybe it's like the insanity and then maybe that's like was in his heart or I don't know. And it's kind of like the devil is like, you know, like he's just kind of creating wanting. These like, yeah. Yeah, it's just part of whatever it is he does, and it makes people insane, I guess. I don't know. It's like maybe if you have a little bit of that in your heart, then it gets like exposed, you know, like with all these people, like it was like a like murdering, you know what I mean? Like all right. All these crew members were like they started killing people, you know, out of you would say nowhere. Right. But yeah, it was definitely weird for me. But also when Epps is looking for the other crew and he, you know, we see that he gets crushed when he, like, the blood comes up the pipe and it's like, oh, no, there he is. He's right there.
And then, you know, he winds up shooting with a shotgun, winds up shooting Dodge with a shotgun, and then he winds up taking on the persona. And Epps is, you know, she's like, well, I love you. I want to be with you. And she goes, whoa, 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 whoa. And like you said, Anastasia, what are you talking about? Just look, we can take the gold. We can run off together. We don't have to worry about this anymore. Let's just leave things be. She's like, no, it's not you. And the next thing you know, it's Ferriman doing what he does. And he tries to make a deal with her since he couldn't make a deal with Dodge. And he goes, look, if you go ahead and just leave the ship intact, because I'm actually the one who has to take all these souls out, can forget about this whole entire thing. Then she winds up shooting. I like how she takes a spare gun and then shoots the detonator to make the ship explode.
Yeah, which is another case in point of him trying to, you know, tempt. He's like temptation all over the place. He's trying to tempt her with a, I'll let you live, you know, if you help me or if you forget about all of your friends who I, you know, I guess murdered, which in fact, I think if she would have taken that deal, she would have been marked, you know, because like, that's an evil thing to do, you know? Right.
Well, even if so she took that deal,
it's like though, a lose-lose situation for her, I feel like.
Right. Because even if she takes that deal, think of it like this, how many years would you actually live? He said, I'll let you live, but he didn't say for how long he'll let you.
Oh yeah, loophole. Yeah, he's like, come on, let's do this for management.
Right. Management will be so proud of me.
He's like just some middle guy, like right. Who's terrible at his job. He can't get these freaking ghosts. He keeps on trying to like I don't know, because apparently there's all of these innocent ghosts and he's stuck on this ship.
He's like the union guy.
Exactly. Until he can like he can try to tempt all of these. Does he have to like keep on bringing people onto the ship to get these ghosts to like change sides or something? Like, that's another thing that like I can't think too much about because it's like there's too many questions then, you right. know?
I agree. But I also like how he says he can't use Katie as a way to manipulate her because of her innocence. These other people who have sins. So he's feeding off the sins of other people while also feeding off the sins of the living as well. So he's this big powerful being, but yet an explosion will kill him.
Yeah, I know. I know. I mean, horror movie logic, I guess.
I wanted a little bit more of a battle. You know what I mean? I wanted a little bit more of a confrontation of maybe like a 10-minute battle scene with them wrestling against each other or something.
Yeah, or him like using his telekinesis powers against her, and she's got to like, you know, run away from pipes and stuff, which she's not very good at.
Right.
Yeah, but I definitely thought there was going to be a bigger showdown, but it makes sense for the ending why we didn't get that.
Right, we're going to talk about that ending because I think they wanted to make a Ghost Ship 2 probably.
Hey, I'm down for it. Let's do it.
Right, I'm down for that.
I'll help write it.
Hey, I'm down with it. I'll just go in for the ride. I'll support it. I'll donate some money towards it. But
wouldn't that be great if we got that? Oh my god.
I'll be down for a Kickstarter. Seriously. But you know, I do like the fact that you have these souls now floating up in the sky. They're at peace now. I love, even though it's CGI and we see the ship breaking in half and then we see it tail end of it picking up. I love that whole entire thing of this ship now being broken in half and now they can actually live out an eternity. So I like.
Yeah, the ship definitely went boom. And then she's like, oh, it's finally over now.
Right. And then she's also, Katie helps Epps escapes the sinking ship. She's left in the debris of the souls and trapped on the ship ascend to heaven. Drifting on an open sea, Epps is found by a cruise ship and returned to land. As she is loaded into an ambulance, she sees the battered crates of gold being loaded on the cruise ship, followed by Furman. He glares at Epps and carries on. She carries out as the ambulance doors close. But what I found that was interesting, it was all the people that she knew that was carrying the crates.
Well,
or so that's
it felt like. It felt like there. It was almost like, I don't know if these were like stand-ins for the crew because they were definitely trying to emulate that it was her crew. But while I was watching it, I was like, that is not a single main like actor, none of them. So I don't know if it was something about production that they let them go, but it wasn't any of our original actors. But they were definitely trying to give off that vibe. So I don't know if it was like their stunt doubles or what. But yeah, no, that was crazy. What a fun, twisted ending. Because it's like, oh, here he goes again, up to his same old shit.
Right, and here's the thing. I knew the ending was coming, but I forgot that she was on one of the crates or something. And I'm thinking to myself, what if, and I know that it's impossible gold, but what if she was actually, maybe Katie put the gold in that trunk and she's holding on to it. Loading, but the gold weighs too much.
It's so heavy. Yeah.
Right. So that didn't make sense to me. I'm like, nah, I'm just.
I don't even know if she could get away with like one piece of gold. No. You know what I mean? Like when you think about like how heavy, it's like you want to just survive. You want to live. It's like flight or fright at that moment. You know, like survival instincts.
Right. But I don't think that she would have actually took it. I don't think Epps would have took it. But what if Katie thought, hey, look, you helped us. I'm gonna help you. You get the gold that Furman was actually after. So that's what my logic was.
It sounds like we need a sequel where we could go into what exactly happened. Right. And make up our own theories.
Right. But hey, I enjoy this movie still. I found things that I really enjoyed about this. And I want to go ahead and ask you, how do you feel about it now we broke it down scene by scene? What is your stripping away the nostalgia?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I can strip away the nostalgia at all. I'm always going to be a fan of something, even if I go in and, you know, like put on my glasses and like, you know, trying to look at everything from this perspective of like talking about it more in depth. I thought that it was more apparent that the script needed a little bit more of a tweak. You know, I mean, if you know your history of this film, the cast and everybody, they were attached to a different version of the film. It was supposed to be more psychological. It wasn't supposed to be this like horrific of a tale, and then it switched. So I don't know if that came across in anybody's performances or not, but it definitely seemed like the script, maybe it was massive like rewrites. And I feel like it was probably rushed just because like they were having people come out, you know, sets were being made, you know, you're under the gun. It's a miracle that any film gets made when you think about it. And anybody who has a lot of opinions, like obviously has never made a film because there's so much on the line when you're dealing with this big of a project or any project at all. But so that for me, revisiting it with that kind of in mind, the script needed another tweak. Otherwise, I mean, I had such a blast watching it. The effects held up, you know, all of this different stuff held up. How about for you?
Well, what would you give it out of 10, though?
Oh, I mean, still, I would say like a 8.5 or 9. I mean, okay. It's not a perfect, it's unfortunate. I mean, I don't know. It's not a super perfect film. It's a fun watch.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. I watched it before I knew I was doing this with you. I watched it like while we were doing the Dexter stuff because I felt like, because I was seeing the actor on Dexter.
Right.
And so I was like kind of in the mood. And so I kind of, that's how it, like, for the most part, that's what leads what horror films I want to revisit with my daughter. And so I was kind of in the mood to watch this because, you know, he's like the star of this film. And so, yeah, so still high for me. I don't get why people like hate on it so much. I think it is such a perfect example of how practical effects are so incredible, in camera effects, all of this kind of stuff. I love it. And I think the people who worked on it should be so proud. And I love, you know, it's part of that. It was like Zemeckis and other people, they were kind of trying to remake the Castle films and stuff. And this was one of the original films because they were trying to do, I think, once they got it going, because they did House on Haunted Hill remake, you know, and then they did 13 Ghosts. I enjoyed both of them.
I still enjoy 13 Ghosts.
Yeah, I don't know why. I love it. I love it so much. I don't know why people like crap on those films so much. But maybe my taste is off. I don't know. But I really love effects heavy films, and maybe like the audience who is watching it and giving their opinions aren't into horror, aren't into practical effect. I don't know, but it looks so good.
Unless
it's like
thinking,
perfection for me.
Right. I love practical effects, and I'm just going to go on ahead and give you my rating and everything too.
Yes. Yes. Please.
So. Okay, so I know I gave this a 7.5 out of 10 for nostalgia. I'm giving this an 8 because I really enjoyed this. It's hard for me to take this and look at it in a modern day. I tried stripping away the nostalgia of it. I cannot strip away the nostalgia of it. I'm still hook, line, and sinker into this film. The production of it is just fantastic. The set pieces are fantastic. The special effects are a perfect blend of CGI and practical. The originality behind it is even better to me, and it still adds a little bit of extra flavor to it later on when you rewatch it again and maybe find some stuff that you might have missed before and you're questioning certain things. It's okay to question certain things, but I don't like to actually tear things apart to where I'm not enjoying it. And so I find myself enjoying this film. I would definitely watch this again. I'm enticed with it. I love everything about it. The actors did a good job with it. Yes, the script needs some tweaking and stuff like that. But underneath the surface, it's actually a good movie. And I don't think it deserves the Rotten Tomato score that it got. I feel like it deserves more, you know? And, you know, one of my friends has a podcast called It's Not That Bad, where he rates bad movies and finds something good about it. This is practically my first time doing It's Not That Bad kind of movie review, but I have to say this movie is fantastic, and I can't find anything really negatively bad about this film.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I'm so glad that we're doing kind of a love letter to Ghost Ship, because I feel like it gets like, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of fans out there, but I don't know. I feel like we need to go out there and help the ratings a little bit more, because I know when I'm going through like different movies on Netflix or Prime or something like that, if I see a low score, I'm probably not going to like check it out. But this one so deserves a watch.
I agree.
I mean, these are just like minor little tweaks. I don't even want to say it's the script's fault, because like sometimes things get edited, you know, like maybe whole scenes were edited out and it gets a little, it's not always any one thing. I mean, you know, with like film, it's a collaborative medium. And so I don't know. I love the film. I think it's great. I think it looks great. I like the rock music that comes out of nowhere. I think it kills. And I think it totally deserves when somebody says like, oh, it's like the best opening segment, or it's the best this or that.
I had that in my top. Whenever I did best opening scenes of all time for my podcast, I put that as, I forgot what number it was, but that's actually...
It's so great. I mean, I can't, I'm like trying to think if there's anything else that compares, because it's just so 180, you know, because it's like, you think you're getting this like kind of romance. I mean, the little girl, you know, she's bored and stuff. And then bam, things are about to get weird.
I definitely love that Scrabble piece. If I had to get a prop from this movie, it'd probably be that Scrabble piece.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I don't know what I would want. Probably one of the like puppet of the people getting like cut in half from the wire or something. Or maybe the wire, just the wire.
Okay. Just a bloody wire. Okay.
I'll take anything. I'll take anything. I love the film so much.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Anastasia. This has been a real pleasure. I can't wait for us to be able to do this. Guys, I hope that you guys enjoy this. Tell us what you think of Ghost Ship. What do you give it? Because I know I'm going to go on Letterboxd later on and help this movie out. So I would like to know, we both would like to know, what your score would be nostalgically, and also stripping with nostalgia if you're chosen. Also, too, don't forget to go over to Spotify, give me a 5-star review. And always until next time, guys. Have a great, safe day. We'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye, guys. Thank you again, Anna.
Thank you.
All right, welcome. Bye.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.